The reality of personal relationships saves everything. These are words that Merton once wrote to his friend Jim Forrest. You may have heard of a debate in Merton circles, a polite debate, mind you, this is the Merton Society, about whether we're brought together as followers of the person, Thomas Merton, or, as argued by Bonnie Thurston in her 1993 presidential address, as people inspired by the message of Thomas Merton. To push the argument further, Fiona Gardner, while serving on a previous board term, stated that she was not as much interested in the message of Thomas Merton as it was stated over 50 years ago, but what Merton would be saying now. And at this point, on the logical train of thought, I'm going to jump off the tracks. These are important considerations, yet I fear the task of putting words in Merton's mouth or thinking I can be some kind of oracle proclaiming Merton's message for today. However, I am interested in how the community, this society, brought together by Merton, is engaging the contemporary world, regardless if inspired by Merton the person, Merton's message fixed in print, or those seeking some future to which he seemed to be pointing. I'm fascinated by the conversations and the civil debate that is a living phenomenon unto itself, which persists independently of a person who died over 50 years ago. In the end, it is the reality of personal relationships that saves everything. My friends, it may only be in the end that everything is saved, because there is so much to be saved. To ignore the context of this letter is to miss the magnitude of what needed saving then, what needs saving now. Merton wrote this letter to Jim Forrest February 21st, 1966. Forrest had written to Merton in the pit of personal despair, a peace activist in anguish. Their opposition to the Vietnam War was growing. More troops were being deployed and casualties were mounting on all sides. There was a maddening feeling that the growing chorus of voices opposing the war were landing on deaf ears. Even amidst Merton's letter of encouragement, he acknowledges, quote, "This country is sick, man." Merton types "sick" in all caps. Continues, "People are fed on myths. They are stuffed up to the eyes with illusion." In 2017, Michael Higgins eloquently drew contemporary parallels to the situation Merton witnessed, quote, "Thomas Merton will not let us forget what happens when words are held hostage by those who intend more than mischief for us, when words have become drones of discontent, missiles of madness, surreal sound bites disconnected from reality, lethal weapons in the hands of advertisers, spin doctors, political apologists, apparatchiks of industry, state, and yes, religion." I don't sound as good saying it as Michael Higgins, so I apologize. It is the reality of personal relationships that save, so it is both personal but not individualistic, a person in relational contact with others in authentic community. Merton remained critical to the end of what he called the heresy of individualism, but also critical of the collectivism and the impersonal institutional culture that stifles personal integrity and the higher goals of community life. In Merton's speech in Thailand, the last speech of his life, he states, quote, "We can no longer rely on being supported by structures that may be destroyed at any moment by a political power or a political force. You cannot rely on structures. The time for relying on structures has disappeared. They are good and they should help us and we should do the best we can with them, but they may be taken away. And if everything is taken away, what do you do next?" How then do we avoid the pitfalls of structures and institutions to create true community? The conference we will enjoy does not happen without structures and institutions. We are very grateful for this institution in Santa Clara. The conference we'll enjoy doesn't happen without these things, but fortunately at the visioning session at the end of the 2017 conference, past ITMS President Bonnie Thurston gave us good counsel. She warned that the ITMS should avoid, quote, corporate mentality. I don't know if I completely lived up to a challenge as president, or if I know all of what this warning to avoid a corporate mentality entails, but I took it to mean we should focus on the personal and human side of society interactions. To avoid boiling down members to numbers or a database of publication subscribers. Maybe it also meant trying to stay true to what Merton was about, even if that message remains countercultural and a softer, gentler, less authentic Merton might be more attractive. We're living through a time of low trust in institutions. This distrust in our religious institutions has been fed by scandal, such as the vast clergy sexual abuse scandal in the Catholic Church. In March 1968, Merton responds to a letter from writer Czesław Miłosz, who was leveling criticism at the church and confessed to being an outsider to it. Merton writes to Miłosz, "You can say absolutely nothing about the church that will shock me. If I stay with the church, it's out of a disillusioned love, and with a realization that I myself cannot be happy outside, though I have no guarantee of being happy inside either. In effect, my happiness does not depend on any institution or establishment. As for you, you are part of my church, of friends, who are in many ways more important to me than the institution." In a process mirroring distrust of religious institutions, Americans have become more distrusting of the political establishment. Anybody watch the debates? There are fewer centrists left in Congress, and dialogue is breaking down. Polarization of political discourse is off-putting to many Americans, it's off-putting to me. It's mere trends in which citizens have gravitated towards echo chambers, moving to online communities and geographic communities that think and vote alike. In this atmosphere of low trust, there is a rebellion against the intellectual authority formerly vested in institutions. There's a distrust of the media and the scientific community. The average Google user is benighted as an expert because information of all quality levels is so easily acquired. Though we have divided more into partisan camps, such an anti-expert revolt from authoritative knowledge is prevalent on the whole range of the political spectrum, manifesting in such phenomena as climate change denial to the anti-vaccine movement. In this privileging of individual opinion over expert analysis, we contribute to a solipsistic ethos that's literally lethal to life as we know it, as we see in megastorms, species extinction, and the resurgence of measles and other deadly diseases. When we banish the experts, we fuel the flames of conspiracy. Most academic studies seem to conclude that conspiracies are not new and not particular to this point in history. Like the revolt against experts, no party has a monopoly on conspiracies. Yet given the troubles social media giants like Facebook have had in preventing the rapid spread of the popularity of untruths in the 2016 U.S. election, I find it difficult to think that this is not having a detrimental effect on our collective grip on reality. Though conspiracy theories have existed in Merton studies concerning his death from the beginning, we've witnessed two books on the subject just since last conference. I am all in favor of fact-finding in good faith and working to seek the truth together responsibly. If the goal is a more accurate narrative of the events surrounding Merton's last day, I'm supportive, as long as it does not serve to overshadow the overarching meaning of the 99.9% of the rest of his life. However, if in the end conclusive findings remain elusive, while some writers employ variant details of the last day of his life to disparage the reputation of trusted scholars of Merton's life, please count me out. Meeting after meeting of the society, I've seen an alternative to these threats to the community. There is a sharing of knowledge and a respectful dialogue. People come out of their silos, academic and non-academic professional, history professors, theology professors, medical doctors, business people, retirees, and graduate students, learning from each other. Interest in Merton is being passed to new generations of readers and scholars. And we have seen those who knew Merton continue to pass from life since last meeting. Harold Talbot, who arranged the meeting between Merton and the Dalai Lama. Brother Patrick Hart, Merton's last secretary and scholar and editor of many Merton tomes. We've lost members and friends in the society, those who served in leadership, presented papers, or contributed to the friendly spirit of the conference, such as Don Grayson, John Collins, Robert Hale, Marie Grip, Mass Canon, and others. From the Dagi scholars to the founding members of the society, there's an exchange of energy and wisdom that animates this space. Maybe it's not unique, but I know of nothing like it. My wish is that we take this spirit inspired by Thomas Merton and nurtured in this community and plant seeds of respectful dialogue in our disparate networks so that just maybe, in the midst of this mad place, the reality of these personal relationships may have a chance to begin saving everything. Thank you.